Hello and welcome to Weekend Recap. I'm your host, Joshua Halstead, and we have some box office charting and some movie reviews to talk about. So let me start with an announcement, actually. The announcement is this. This is the week of Thanksgiving here in the United States, so I am doing Weekend Recap, and this month's What the Schlock will go up on the last day of the month. However, on the day after Thanksgiving, there will not be a schlock culture, as I will be out of town on that day. So, on that Friday, there will not be a schlock culture. We will be back on Monday with Weekend Recap. We will have a What the Schlock on the last day of the month, and schlock culture will resume the following Friday. All right, so let's talk about some movie news. So, when we talk about the box office this time, I'm not going to dive into it too much because not a whole lot has changed since last time, and I've found that it can become repetitive to sort of talk about how the same films have done over time. So what I want to address is kind of one specific story, but let's start with talking about the highest grosses this weekend domestically. So at number one, no surprise here, Frozen 2. That's with $130 million. Below that, Ford versus Ferrari with $19 million. I'm sorry, $15 million. Followed by A Beautiful Day in the Neighborhood at $13 million. 21 Bridges at $9 million. And then Midway at $4 million. All right, so a couple things to talk about here. Midway was at the number one slot last week. It's now, the number two slot last week. Now it's at the number five. But Midway didn't open well in the first place. Charlie's Angels, all the way down to the number eight slot. Last Christmas to number nine. Dr. Sleep, all the way down to number 13. So Dr. Sleep is pretty much officially a bomb here. This is not a great month for movies. But Frozen 2 comes out, and dang, man, Frozen 2 with $130 million, which is a massive opening. So let's talk about Frozen 2, and that's the box office chart we're going to talk about today. So Frozen 2, domestically, it's made $130 million. Internationally, $228 million. Worldwide, it is made $358.5 million. It's been out for 4 days. 4 days, folks, which is insane. This is so much money. So, first of all, this is now the highest opening for an animated film in November. It's one of the highest openings for November of all time. This is really, really impressive. This might be the highest Disney opening, Disney animated opening. But I don't know that, and that would depend on how you feel about if the Lion King 2019 film is animated or live action. But this is super impressive. And we're actually going to review Frozen 2 in this episode. We're going to get into that. But I just wanted to start by saying, hey, that's awesome. So good job, Frozen 2. Let's talk about the list of highest grossing domestic and international films of the year. So the domestic box office, you got a pretty simple thing here. Number one is Endgame. Number two, Toy Story 4. Number four, Captain Marvel. So on and so forth. We talked about this before. Nothing has changed so far domestically in that regard. But at the number 18 slot is Frozen 2. Right above that is Aquaman. And that's only at 136. So Frozen 2 is going to surpass that. Then we got Shazam. And Shazam is at 137. It's going to surpass that. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at 140. It's going to pass that. Pokemon, Detective Pikachu at 144. It's going to pass that. Secret Life of Pets 2 at 157. It's going to pass that. How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World at 158. It's going to pass that. So my prediction is, I don't know it's going to get up to 171. In domestic. So as far as this week. So my prediction is going into Thanksgiving is a big factor here. Thanksgiving, people go see movies on Thanksgiving, on Black Friday, that long weekend. and especially with their family. So Frozen might do really well. So here's what I'm going to say. My prediction is, at the very least, you'll take So at the very least, it's going to take that How to Train Your Dragon slot, the number 12 slot. But I can definitely see it jumping up and knocking us out of the number 9 slot. I don't see it getting quite to It Chapter 2 this week. I could see it jumping up and taking us at that number 9 slot, as far as just for this week. So now let's talk about worldwide. So worldwide, Frozen 2 is at the number 22 slot with 358. Now, here's what we should look at here. It's right behind Shazam yet again, right? Shazam's at 364. It's going to pass that. It's going to pass Once Upon a Time, right? So it's a lot of the same things. And then we got Godzilla, King of Monsters, Alita, Battle Angel. So as we go up and look at these, I think it's very likely it's going to jump up into that maybe number 16 slot and replace My People, My Country. I don't know that it would pass Secret Life of Pets 2, but it might. My prediction is it takes that number 16 slot and probably doesn't pass Secret Life of Pets. So that is the box office charting this week. I know it's a short amount. I really wanted to touch on what Frozen was doing. Nothing else has really changed, and I don't want to make you guys listen to the same sort of box office charting every week. So we got reviews now. And let me tell you, we have a few reviews here. So let's start off with my review of Frozen 2. So, to give preface to this, I didn't like the first Frozen movie. I did really like the music in the first Frozen movie quite a lot, but I didn't like the movie, and I'll tell you why. The first movie to me felt like a series of disconnected music videos, like almost like a series of vignettes. And the vignettes on their own, when there's music, are really good. But when there's not music, the characters are two-dimensional, the jokes aren't funny, the storyline is basically non-existent. It just doesn't work for me. It's not a film. So, when I saw Frozen 2, and I could tell by the trailers I was going to like it more than the first one, but I wasn't sure how I was going to feel going in. I sat down, and I'll tell you something. Within the first couple of minutes, I was already starting to get on board. But I was cautious, but I was starting to get on board. I was starting to go, okay, yeah, I like where this is going. As it kept unfolding, I noticed a few things. Now, first of all, I will tell you, there is a large portion, and I'm not going to consider this a spoiler. If you don't want to know anything about the film, anything at all, you don't want to listen. But I'm not going to tell you any plot spoilers. I'm not going to describe anything like that. I'm just going to make a reference that if you've seen the film, you'll get. Otherwise, I don't necessarily think you will. This is very much, it's very inspired by Avatar: The Last Airbender. And it took maybe a couple of minutes before I went, okay, that's what you're doing. But that being said, they did a lot of interesting original stuff with it. They actually developed the characters. They have a really compelling story here. Not wholly original, but very compelling. And it has a deeper meaning and a deeper message than the first film. So the first film had this message about sisterhood and true love in that way, right? And not needing a man. And that's awesome, but it's also like not very deep in the way that Disney handled it. So with this film, I won't say what the message is, but the message is much clearer. It's much deeper. It's much more intelligent, and it's much more mature. And that, I think, goes for the whole film. The film is much more mature. The characters are well-developed. It's much deeper. The animation is gorgeous. Gorgeous. Like, I don't know how to express to you that this is some of the best animation I've ever seen in my life. It is very beautiful animation. The songs are really good. I don't know that they are as good as songs as the original film's songs. However, within context of film, these are much better. So do with that as you will. There's no song necessarily that's the let it go of this movie, and the music is not as good if you're just listening to the songs. But within how it works within the narrative, contextually, it's infinitely better in Frozen 2. So I want to start with those positives, right? And I want to talk about, for instance, the film, without any spoilers at all, of course. The film has a careful consideration of colonialism, where the film doesn't start out with the predisposition that colonialism is always bad. But as the film unravels, we see gray areas, right? And then we see coexistence being displayed. And what's really important about that is that it's a film that isn't necessarily swinging one way politically or the other way politically all the way. It's a film that wants to live in that gray area, and they want to talk about togetherness and about growing together and about unity. And not only does it talk about it in a way that, you know, all Disney films do, but it's a film that addresses history that many nations have, and that addresses the importance of understanding that history and growing from that history, and understands the gray areas there, right? So I saw some reviews talking about how the film talks about colonialism, so clearly it's about how America is bad and evil, and I don't think that's the case. So first of all, you can talk about colonialism and the issues with American colonialism and a lot of countries' colonialism, colonization, there we go, and not be against those countries, clearly. But then the other portion of it, because this is not a political podcast, I have a different one for that. The other portion of that is that there is also a difference between peacefully inhabiting a land, sharing it with the people that live there, if they're willing to share with you, like that kind of thing, and then going to the land and slaughtering people. And there are also many, many, many nations that have colonized in very much the same way that the United States did. The point of that being, this is not a film that has anything to do with American politics at all. Nothing to do with American politics at all here. So I think that there's a campaign sort of online about tearing this film apart because they think that it's making this very left-leaning swing and it's indoctrinating children. I don't think it is. I don't think it is at all. I think that the message is about how we shouldn't steal from others, and how we should come together, and how we should learn to coexist, and how we should learn from our past so we don't repeat those mistakes. And I don't think that any of those are inherently political messages, and I don't think that the packaging of those messages is inherently political in this film. I thought the message was really well handled, and they do a lot of dwelling in that gray area in this film, a lot of it. And I really like it because it still has a very powerful and a very important message, but it does it in a way that's more mature and that trusts its audience. To that end, Elsa. Let's talk about Elsa. Elsa is a character who in the first movie had basically no development, like no dimensions. And in this film, she's given a lot of dimension. Elsa is still kind of a plot device, though. They don't really break out of that mold of boxing her into just being there to serve the plot and then giving most of the attention to Anna. Here's the thing. First of all, I love the character of Anna, having seen Frozen 2. And Kristen Bell is one of my favorite actresses of all time, like in my top three. So I have no problem with Kristen Bell in film. My concern is you have a film that is very much about the relationship between sisters, especially after what the first film sets up. And in this movie, they kind of don't elaborate on that. There's a portion where they're separated. That's not a spoiler. There are little things that happen throughout that sort of distract from the sister storyline. And there's a very, very clear need for Elsa to move the plot forward for other characters' development, which I get why it's necessary. And they did a much better job handling it here than in the first film. But it was a bit... It grew a bit tiresome for me towards the very end of the film. But that being said, there is also in this film... I touched on the animation, but I have to be clear here. It's not just that the animation is pristine and beautiful as far as the rendering. There are scenes in this movie that I would hold up as some of the most beautiful scenes put to film. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm certainly not saying that this is the best film of the year. It's far from. I'm certainly not saying this is the best Disney animated film. It's far from. I'm not calling it a perfect film by far. I'm going to get into negatives here in a moment. But removing context of anything else within the film, there are scenes that visually are so gorgeous and perfectly put together. Specifically, one with Elsa's... I'm not going to spoil it. Elsa gets a water friend. There we go. Not a spoiler. And it's wonderful. So, yeah, there's a lot to really like about this film. And you should. And I hope you go see it. But let's talk about the negatives here for a moment. So the first one, and no spoilers, no spoilers at all, I didn't like the ending. So there's an ending that it looks like it's going to set up, and that ending is fantastic and really dark. And then it doesn't do it. And unfortunately for me, I did leave the theater a bit disappointed that it didn't just go all out and go with that darker ending. That being said, the movie itself is very dark. It still touches on really, really, really dark topics. And it's very mature and very deep. So it bothered me that the ending kind of copped out because of what the rest of the film was. But not to the extent that I didn't enjoy the film. The other negatives here. I hate to be this guy. I hate Olaf. I didn't like Olaf in the first film. But in the first film, Olaf has some really funny little quips, even though I find him annoying. And I like the Olaf song in the first movie. Olaf is in this movie, is used in this movie so much more. So much more. And the shtick that they're doing with him really doesn't work. It ends up in a lot of awkward situations where nobody in the audience was laughing. And he becomes really grating. He does have a couple of scenes that are really good. He has, I can think of two jokes in this movie that are two of the best parts of this movie. But then he's overutilized through so much of the rest of the film. And it even hinders those jokes because by the time the first one happens, he's already annoying. So he starts doing something that's actually funny and it takes you a minute to accept that he's being funny. Which is unfortunate because those jokes are really, really good, but they clash. Olaf's character in this very much clashes with the tone of the rest of the film. And that's unfortunate. So Olaf is a big one there. Then I want to talk about two other things before we wrap up this review. One of them is Kristoff. I love Jonathan Groff. Love Jonathan Groff. And Kristoff has a song on his own in this movie that is fantastic. Maybe the best song on the soundtrack. Really good. However, the plot line for Kristoff is unfortunately kind of dull, and it's an overused plot line in pop culture, and I just didn't care, and I didn't get the sense from the reactions in the audience who was, you know, they were pretty vocal, I didn't get the sense from them that they cared, and I just found it disappointing. It's not bad. It's nothing that ruins the film, but it's a bit disappointing because they could have done a lot more with Kristoff and they didn't, and they had to write him out for sort of a plot reason. It just didn't really work for me how they did it. Again, nothing that ruins the film or is like, oh, that part's just outright sucks. There's nothing. It's not like, oh, I hate it. It's just that it doesn't really work. It just falls a little flat. The other thing. So The LGBTQ community has been wanting for a long time for Elsa to be gay. That is something that stems from the fact that in the first film, Elsa's journey very much seems like an analogy for the LGBTQ community, which I actually agree with. I think it would make perfect sense for Elsa to be gay or bi or whatever. Disney had kind of hinted and teased at that for this film, and the cast had kind of hinted and teased for that for this film. And I'm not going to consider this a spoiler. She's not shown to be really. There's a specific relationship that I could see going there if they get a third film. But it seems like Disney is playing coy on this so as to not upset their fan base. But if you're concerned about conservatives being upset about your film, then it doesn't make sense to have a colonization, an anti-colonization message, essentially, right? So it's a weird decision to me that they kind of teeter between those two. I would love for Elsa to be gay. I don't, you know, if she's not, I'm fine with that as well. But I would like them not to tease things that they're not going to do, right? I don't like them gay baiting. Or queer baiting. I don't like that. It's something that studios have an issue with. Harry Potter's been doing that recently. You know, it's fine if your characters are straight. It's fine if your characters are gay. It's not fine to lie and say your characters are gay if they're not gay. Don't do that. That's just dishonest, right? You're lying to people to get them excited for a film that's ultimately going to disappoint them because of your lie. I don't like that. So overall, maybe next question start with the negatives. So overall, my review of Frozen, I'm going to go ahead and give it an 8 out of 10. I really enjoyed it. It sounds really fun. I have two more reviews, and they're going to be shorter. So the first one is actually going to be something a little interesting. So if you are into movie reviews, that kind of stuff, you probably know who Chris Stuckman is. So Chris Stuckman is a movie reviewer on YouTube. He's a pretty big deal. He's such a big deal, in fact, that he is actually able to review films as a critic professionally on Rotten Tomatoes, stuff like that. It's a really, really big deal. He's one of the most well-known and loved movie reviewers out there. Chris Stuckman is one of the guys who convinced me that I could do this, somebody who I really, really like and who inspires me. So he has been telling his fans for a long time that what he's always wanted to do is direct, and that's his passion, and that's where he wants to go. So he actually is directing now. He did a short film called Auditorium 13, I believe, which is going to be in a compilation film. And then he filmed a short film called Notes from Melanie, which because he did for a relatively cheap budget, he went ahead and posted that on his YouTube on Friday, and a commentary version is on there as well. And you can go and watch them for free. I recommend doing it. Go to Chris Stuckman. Go to YouTube, type in Chris Stuckman. Click on it. Notes from Melanie is up there. So I want to talk about it a little bit. I was really excited to see what his filmmaking chops are, because I've seen the little skits over the years on his reviews and stuff, but they're all sort of silly. And I wasn't sure what to expect. And let me tell you what you can expect. Chris Stuckman is a fantastic dialogue writer. And the reason is, I think, because he spent so many years doing dialogue stuff on the internet, right? Reviewing movies and perfecting his voice in those. You can see, if you watch his old videos versus new videos, you watch over time his artistic voice sort of ruminate and grow and develop. In doing that, he's also made a bunch of friends, right? So he's got Matt Brando, who's in the short film, and John Flickinger, who's in the short film, right? And as you're watching, so first of all, and he's under no illusions about it. He talked about in the commentary that the writer's in many ways him, the writer characters are in many ways him. It's a simple little short film. It's about 20 minutes long, and it's about a screenplay writer who wants to do more than these schlocky B movies, And so he calls his ex, who's really successful. He's like, I need your help. I want to do something great. And it's just conversation between them. That's all I'm going to say plot-wise, because I didn't know much going in, and I don't want you to. So first of all, the character looks like Chris Stuckman. And he also, in many ways, talks like Chris Stuckman. And there are also moments where the other character does as well. The other main character whose name is Melanie, where she'll say a line where I'm like, Chris Stuckman says things like that. There's a part where she goes, and your dialogue is, well, and then she says the S word. And the way she says it, her delivery, like all of it, is how Stuckman reviews films. So there, if you're a fan of him, there are moments where you're like, that's Stuck. But overall, guys, it's really good. So he shot it handheld. It's clearly a small budget short film. But also, it has better dialogue than a lot of the movies coming out nowadays. Not only that, but even though it's handheld, which I'm not necessarily a huge fan of, his handheld work is very, very good in it. And the performances are very good. And there is a specific moment. So listen, I'm a writer, and I want to be a filmmaker. So I connect to the characters in the situation a lot, maybe a lot more than most people would if that's not their passion, not their chosen career goal. But guys, the characters are so relatable, and he's so clever in how he develops the characters through outward dialogue. And there's a specific scene towards the specific moment towards the end when they're reading the screenplay after their spark of an idea, and they're changing things around as they're reading it. And it's so good. It's so powerfully done and passionate and so well written. And Stuckman knows what he's doing. This is one of my favorite short films I've seen in a really, really long time. I wanted to review it because, one, I wanted to shine a light on it. And two, because I really, really liked it. And I wanted to have the opportunity to talk about it. And I have a podcast just for doing that. So, yeah, guys, I give Notes from Melanie a 7.8 out of 10. Just because I do think you can tell the budget a little bit in a few parts. Really, that's the only reason why it's not higher up there. So, okay. The last review and the thing that closes out the podcast. Guys, I just got back, and I mean just got back from seeing Jojo Rabbit. Taika Waititi's brand new film coming to us via Fox Searchlight, where Taika himself, who is a self-described Polynesian Jew, plays Adolf Hitler, but the imaginary friend version of Adolf Hitler, who is friends with a 10-year-old boy in Nazi Germany. And I'm not gonna say anything else because the trailers have been pretty vague, and I think that that's the best way to go into the film. So let me start with this. It is a satire. It's an anti-hate satire, right? They have it on the posters and everything. So I go into the film, and I know Taika because I really like him. So I kind of know his humor. And the film starts out very much that way, right? It has that, like, Wes Anderson with a bit more edge feel that a lot of Taika's films have. I gotta tell you, first of all, the first half of this film feels like you're watching a Mel Brooks movie. Like, it's so funny, and it's that kind of satire. It's over the top. It's these really good gags. Almost every joke in the film lands. The characters are adorable. It's really well shot. I mean, it's great. And there's a lot of moments where I was like, this feels like Mel Brooks. This feels like old-time, really good satire, back when satire was highbrow. The film also, without saying anything about the plot, has a moment, a specific moment, where you realize, oh, we're getting serious now. And it's serious for a good portion, and then it goes back to funny. But I have not seen Taika handle serious subject matter with such grace and aplomb in any of his films. So the comedy works, the drama works, everything in the film works. This is not only one of my favorite films of the year, if not my favorite film of the year, this is one of my favorite films I've seen in probably 10 years. It is hilarious. It is heartfelt. It is gorgeous. It is beautiful to look at. All the performances were really, really good. I mean, you have a bunch of kid actors in here. And normally, even when a kid actor is good, I'm like, but it's a kid. I honestly, guys, didn't even think about the fact that it was child actors until the end of the movie. And I was like, oh, almost that entire movie is led by children, and they're all fantastic. There's this little kid that is so much like Nick Frost, so much like Nick Frost, and he's hilarious. Yeah, it's really, really good. And I gotta say, Sam Rockwell, man, Sam Rockwell is one of my favorite actors, and he, every time I see him, he surprises me and gives me another amazing performance. Not that I'd be surprised he gives an amazing performance, but that I'd be surprised that every single time I see him, he is always the best part of whatever film he's in, no matter who else is acting with him, right? He can act alongside Steve Carell and still be the best part of the movie, which is insane. And Rockwell is, again, I think, the best part of the film here. Although, I gotta say, Taika as imaginary friend version of Hitler is really, really, not just really funny, but there are moments, and I don't want to say anything that'll give anything away, but there are moments where he's not trying to be funny, where he's also very, very good. This is a really daring film to make in 2019, no doubt about it, but this is very much and very clearly an anti-hate satire. It is a wonderful film. It is so sweet. It is like feel-good movie of the year, but also like super well directed and written and everything. It's really good. So I recommend you guys go see Jojo Rabbit. I'm going to give Jojo Rabbit a 9.5 out of 10. And that is the podcast, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As I said at the beginning of the show, there will be no schlock culture this Friday. I will be posting What the Schlock on the last day of the month. We will be back with Weekend Recap next Monday. Until I see you next, go schlock yourselves.